Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm Alistair Beckett King.
And I'm James Shakeshaft.
And here we are. It's summer.
It is.
It's time for the summer holidays. And as you well know, James, I hopped a five-hour train from stinky old London town to the west of Cornwall. The Wild West, they call it.
The Wild West.
Where cafes close at 2 p.m. for no clear reason.
That's peak cafe time.
Yes, there's pensioners wandering the streets confused. Open the cafe, for goodness sake, but they won't do it. And I came back with some very spooky tales.
Ooh.
Why, it's the ghost-busting Parsons of Penzance. Turtle power. James Shakeshaft.
Alistair Beckett King.
Sorry, did I startle you?
A little.
That's all right. I'm back.
You're back, baby.
I'm back.
Don't call it a comeback.
No, it's not. Well, I did come back.
Yeah.
So in a way, it is.
Were you in like a leather jumpsuit with your name in light bulbs in behind you?
Yep, that's right. Yes.
That's going to be kicking out a lot of heat with all your names.
Yeah. I have been away in Penzance, Cornwall, just under a week. And James, don't talk to me about heat.
Oh no.
No shelter from the sun's fury. It's not as touristy as I expected. I've only really been to seaside towns like Blackpool and Bridlington, you know, the old Victorian resorts. I thought it would be, as goths are to Whitby, pirates would be to Penzance.
Yes, surely.
There's no pirates there.
You didn't see one?
I didn't see a single pirate. But also, I expected, there'll be rides for the kids. There'll be kids dressed up as pirates. There'll be, everything will be, this is where the pirates were from that famous light opera.
Would there be a plaque on the church saying, don't look for Captain Pugwash's grave, he's a fictional character, as there is for Dracula in the Whitby one.
Exactly. Stop looking for Dracles.
Stop looking for Captain Pugwash.
It's imaginary. So I thought it was going to be all in on pirates, and it's almost as if the people there find that a little tiresome.
Did you do the other joke, though, where you went into like a pasty shop and asked what the pie rates were in Penzance?
That's very good.
In my experience, they like that as little as the other thing you were describing.
Well, I must say I found the people of Penzance, I found the people of Cornwall in general to be very sweet at one end, but actually savoury at the other end. It's another Cornish pasty crack. I did have a vegan Cornish pasty.
Oh, good
work. In the Telegraph Museum.
What?
Yeah.
The newspaper?
Not the newspaper, the concept of the Telegraph. The concept of an undersea cable connecting Britain with Canada, America, India, and some other places.
And what, did they have bits of it?
Oh, yeah. Just west of Penzance is where all of those cables used to, and to some extent still do, come inland. Where young, clean-shaven men would sit in a cave, literally, during the wars, and just listen to beep, 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 beep.
That's not music, that's just a noise.
You know what the kids like, James?
Ah, those kids.
Those crazy 1940s kids. So I did a bit of research while I was there.
Oh, good work.
Into the old folklore.
Yeah.
And I'd like to talk to you, James, today about the ghost-busting Parsons of Penzance.
Yes, please.
And the surrounding areas. Cornwall, basically. Western Cornwall.
The Lizard Peninsula.
It's not actually the Lizard Peninsula. It's a different peninsula. The Lizard's just a bit down.
Did it fall off the end of the Lizard Peninsula and then the Lizard grew a new one?
Yeah, it's a self-defense mechanism, yeah.
Mm.
If you were to go to Penzance, you could go to Chapel Street, which is the site of a story that I'm going to call Mrs. Baines's Blunderbuss.
Nice.
Which comes from Stories and Folklore of Western Cornwall by William Bottrell, written in 1880.
Billy Botts.
By Willie Botts.
Willie Botts.
Now, Mrs. Baines lived on Chapel Street, which is the oldest street in Penzance, and it used to be called Our Lady's Street, I assume because it's right next to St. Mary's Churchyard.
More. Not because it was named by a Geordie.
War Lady Street. near Voundevore Lane.
Ooh.
Which presumably is a lane leading towards Voundevore, which means the Great Road in Cornish, which is the road connecting Penzance to Mousel, or was then.
Mousehole for any of
I'm pronouncing it Mousel because it's written Mousehole.
It is Mouse. It does look like a mouse hole, but surely that can't be right.
If you're driving on the way, there's a sign that says height restriction, mouse hole. And it's like, I shouldn't think so, because they're really little. But when I said that to the driver, I didn't find that funny at all on the bus. I was like, I shouldn't think so, because they're really small.
Did he just tap the sign that said people should not stand in front of this sign or speak to the driver?
Yep. Yes, he did. And which is a real feat these days, because they've got bulletproof glass.
Is he had a really long thing? He poked it out through the air hole.
Yeah, he was like Eugene Toombs from the X-Files. So Mrs. Baines lived on Chapel Street. Most of these buildings have changed. It's not like that now, but there used to be a great big orchard there, which was Mrs. Baines's orchard out the back of her mansion, where she grew sweet, sweet apples.
Oh, nice. Nice one, Baines.
Do you remember, James, your friend and mine, Calice, had all that trouble with milkshakes?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In her yard.
Yes.
You know, she'd set out the milkshakes.
Yes.
She'd turn her back for 1 second.
Yeah.
The boys would be in.
Thick with boys.
All the boys. In the yard. Mrs. Baines had very much the same problem, but with apples. Apples were so, so sweet. All the boys in Penzance came and scrumped.
Oh.
Pilfered. Stole.
Scrumped for anyone young? Maybe.
Are we still saying scrumping?
It's a fun word that specifically means the thievery of apples.
In the way that rustling means stealing only animals.
Yes.
Scrumping means stealing just apples.
Just apples. But it sounds fun.
It does sound fun. It sounds harmless, but Mrs. Baines did not see it that way. She had her man, John, or Jan. He's called both within the same paragraph, so I assume Jan or Jan is the Cornish shortening of John.
Yeah, probably.
As in Jan Tregeagle?
Yes, I think so.
Which I'm sorry to inform you, according to a book I read, is pronounced Tregeagle.
What?
Yep.
Damn it.
We're not going back and correcting that now. But let that be a taste of how many words I'm going to mispronounce in this episode.
Good.
If I didn't already pronounce Voundevore wrong.
But we got Mousels.
We got Mousel. We got Mousel right, probably. Hopefully. She set her man, her gardener, on guard with a blunderbuss full of dried peas and small shot. And if he saw any rustlings of a night, he was to count to three and then fire.
Allowed? Or was that not specified and that is a twist?
It was indeed allowed, yes, to give them a chance, but to scare them off. But Mrs. Baines was not happy with the quality of work she was getting from John, Jan, Jan. Apples were still disappearing.
Oh.
No blunderbusses were being fired. So she's starting to think he's either letting them get away with the apples or he is falling asleep.
Oh.
The latter was true. She didn't realise it. She decided to teach him a lesson. She herself crept out in her bedclothes into the orchard at night and started a shaking of one of the apple trees, a shaky, 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 and the apples started falling to the ground.
Classic scrump technique.
Yeah, just your basic scrumping.
Yeah.
And according to Billy Botts, the rustling of shaken branches and noise of falling apples awoke him. And seeing somebody, as he thought, stealing apples from their favourite tree. Yeah, I think you see where this is going, James.
Yeah.
He up with his gun and let fly at his mistress, exclaiming at the same time, "Now, you thief, I've paid 'ee off for keeping me out of bed to watch 'ee. I know 'ee, I do, and I will bring 'ee before his worship the mayor tomorrow."
That wasn't 1, 2, 3.
That he didn't actually say 1, 2, 3, it seems. He said a real whole long paragraph. And she replied, "Lord help me, I'm killed," and fell onto the ground.
Oh, no. These old-timey people were, I suppose it's the old Twitter, they like to just constantly commentate on their lives.
Yep, that's her taking selfies with the apples. So I can't believe, shot by own gardener.
Dead.
Hashtag what? Hashtag literally killed.
Hashtag I am killed.
Jan didn't stay to see if that went viral. Thinking he had committed the crime of murder, He ran away to the hills, literally to the hills.
He took to the hills?
He took to the hills and was discovered several days later in Castle Andinus, a vast Iron Age fort nearby. Half starved, apparently. Good news, Mrs. Baines didn't die.
Ah, yeah, that is good news.
A relief. William Bottrell says...
inaccurate, though.
Yeah, she lied.
Makes her
so
inaccurate.
She's alive, but she's a liar.
She may be alive, but she is a liar.
By good luck, the old lady's back was towards her man when he fired, and the greatest portion of the charge took effect below her waist. So by good luck, she was shot in the bottom.
Ah.
Dr. Giddy was fetched, and after some delicate... That's his name.
Yeah.
After some delicate surgical operations, which the lady bore with exemplary patience, pronounced her fright to be more than the hurt.
Nice.
So, no harm done. However, a short time after the old lady got shot, she died.
Oh.
Twist. Just a coincidence, it seems.
Allergic to peas?
We just don't know. It might be. Is there a connection between shooting people and their death? We don't know. We're just asking questions.
You're making wild assumptions there.
Yeah. Correlation is not causation, James.
Cool.
Yeah, she got shot. Yeah, she died shortly afterwards. That's all we know.
She got shot and said, I am killed.
She got shot, fell to the ground and said, I am killed. And then she died. So let's not leap to conclusions about what caused
that. So she's still a liar.
She did not, I can tell you, rest in peace.
Mm. In peace?
Oh, the ultimate RIP. She returned as a ghost, and she was often seen in the orchard, walking the orchard, standing under that tree where she was shot with her hands on her golden cane.
Mm.
He says that everybody knew the old lady by her upturned and powdered grey hair under a lace cap of antique pattern, by the long lace ruffles hanging from her elbows, her short silk mantle, gold-headed cane, and other trappings of old-fashioned pomp. There are many still living in Penzance who remember the time when they wouldn't venture on any account to pass through Vandervoor Lane after nightfall for fear of Mrs. Baines's ghost. Sometimes she would flutter up from the garden or yard, just like an old hen, and perch herself on the wall. Then, for an instant, one might get a glance of her spindle legs and high-heeled shoes before she vanished.
Oh, that's very Wicked Witchy, isn't it?
Yeah, she moved, unusually, from being a visible ghost to going full poltergeist.
Oh.
And she also moved from the garden into the house. She started smashing things, doors, glass, her spinning wheel could be heard. Spinning, that's an example of what that might have sounded like.
Yep.
So, James, here we are. There's something strange in the neighbourhood of Vandervoor Lane.
Who
are you going to call?
I don't know.
Parson Singleton. It's Parson Singleton. Parson Singleton, one of the famous ghost-laying parsons of that part of the world. Because it seems that in Cornwall, vicars, reverends, parsons were treated as a sort of wizard-like wise men with the power to exorcise spirits.
Ah.
Parson Singleton was brought in to deal with the ghost of Mrs. Baines. And he set a task that I think you will find a little bit familiar, James.
Yeah.
He commanded her to weave ropes of sand.
No.
Yeah, friend of the show, ropes of sand, between St. Michael's Mount, which is an island that can be reached by causeway from near Penzance, and St. Clement's Isle, which is a smaller island near Mousel.
Oh.
Now, that area now is what a man of maritime bent would describe as the sea.
Ah.
But I think maybe we can infer from this story that they were sort of sandy banks and the sea didn't come quite as close up to the land as it does now.
Yeah, otherwise that would be impossible.
Completely impossible. Keep she was sentenced to weave a rope or to try for 1,000 years, whichever comes soonest. And I think we can only assume that she hasn't finished yet, but she will return.
I guess so, ultimately, no matter what.
There's one more ghost busting relating to Mrs. Baines in Cornish Feasts and Folklore by Margaret Ann Courtney, 1890. She does a little ghost busting of her own.
Mm.
Even after she was laid, the sound of her spinning wheel, remember that?
Yes.
You remember? People of the house continued to hear it. until, at last, it was discovered that some leather, which had been nailed around a door to keep out drafts, was loose in places, and that the whistling of the wind through this made the peculiar sound.
Oh.
Sorry, kids.
It's haunted leather.
Yeah, it was just noisy leather. Just squeaky. You know the way leather trousers go?
Yes.
It's the same as that, but for doors.
When sometimes you sit in a fancy chair, you have to say, it was the chair.
It was the chair. It was the door. It wasn't a ghost, it was the door.
Mm.
Now, do you remember I mentioned St. Mary's Churchyard?
Yes.
Nearby.
Yeah.
Full name, St. Mary the Virgin Church.
Yeah. Having a right old dig.
It's been there for a while, but the current church was built in 1835. And I can tell you, James, it looks brand new. That was the first thing I said when I saw it. It looks brand new. All sharp edges. Spanking. It looks like it was made of Lego. I thought it was fake. And I was saying this so loudly, a helpful churchman, just a man who was standing in the churchyard, came over to explain.
Oh, really? So the opposite of the old bus driver earlier?
Yeah, he tapped a sign saying, I'm actually happy to talk to you. You're not in London now.
A medal around his neck that said, please stand in front of this sign and talk to me.
He explained that the rock there is very, very hard. So while you and I, James, might be used to saying church is made of, you know, workable sandstone.
Yeah, your sandstones.
Full of intricate carvings.
Yeah.
Gargoyles. Grotesques. Yes, there is a difference.
Mm-hmm. Grotesques are really rubbish ones.
It's not like that in Penzance.
No.
The stone is so hard that it's relatively flat. It's relatively undetailed. So the church still looks brand new, even though it was built in 1835.
Huh.
It just doesn't have any fiddly bits. I can't back all of that up. Some of that was just told to me by a man.
That was told to a man in a churchyard.
So there was a ghost in St. Mary's Churchyard around about the same time as Mrs. Baines walked abroad on a nearby lane, and people would avoid walking through the churchyard at night.
Would it tell them facts about stone?
Because oh,
I think I might be putting two and two together.
Oh, James, wow. I'm genuine. If it were any less hot, I would have had chills. I'm boiling. People were afraid to walk through St. Mary's Churchyard, but not one jolly Jack Tar. Bold sailor. He wasn't afraid of ghosts. One dark and rainy night, a sailor who neither knew nor cared anything about the ghost of St. Mary's, in taking the shortcut...
Just a quick question. Do you know you're doing an accent, or is it like sometimes when you've been there so long,
I've just gone local, yes.
It's very good. Don't get me wrong.
What happened? I forgot where we were.
Sorry, I interrupted.
He was taking a shortcut through the chapel yard. He came as far as the chapel porch when the ghost issued forth on the path and stood there bobbing its head and waving its shroudings before him.
Ooh.
The sailor said, I'm going to make the sailor a Geordie. I don't have any evidence, but I sort of feel like he's a Geordie because what he says is, hello, H-A-L-L-O-A. Hello, who or what are you? Said the sailor. I am one of the dead, the ghost answered. If you are one of the dead, what the deuce do you do here above ground? Go on down below, said the sailor. And what he did was punch the ghost in the head. He decked him, James. Wow. Did you say decked in school?
Yes, yeah.
In down south. Yeah, he decked him. He leered him out.
Oh, he's decked him?
He just decked him.
He's totally decked him.
He's just decked the lad.
He's just decked a ghost.
Oh, he's decked him.
It's the words lost all meaning. I've said it too many times. He decked him. He dealt the ghost a stunning blow over its head, which laid it sprawling on the stones. Now, James, you and I, we know a thing or two about ghosts.
Yes.
That's an unusual method for dealing with them.
Yes.
Doesn't normally work.
No.
They're famously insubstantial.
Yeah. You need some sort of proton pack.
Yeah, you would. So I think you've probably anticipated where this is going. There was no ghost in St. Mary's Churchyard.
Mm-hmm.
There was merely a frolicsome gentleman called Captain Carthew, who lived nearby and had been diverting himself and frightening the townsfolk out of their wits by personating the ghost.
Oh.
Don't come away from that story thinking that there were no ghosts abroad in Penzance,
right.
James.
Good, yeah.
There were tons of them.
Tons more.
And many more ghost-laying reverends, parsons, vicars, etc. One named Thomas Flavelle could quell spirits by laying about him lustily with his walking cane. That was his style.
Did he put it between his legs and be like, "Wee, look at me."
Wee, they'd be all, "Ah,
oh dear,
this I'm going to turn into an animal and return to hell.
This is weird."
The rector of Ladlock, the Reverend Mr. Woods, he had an even better walking cane than Thomas Flavel.
Yeah.
He carried a stout ebony stick. On its massive silver head was engraved a pentacle or Solomon's seal, and on a broad ring or ferrule just below the knob were planetary signs and mystical figures. This staff was regarded with curiosity and awe. It's said that by means of it, he ruled the planets, controlled evil spirits, repelled witchcraft, and performed supernatural work generally.
Is this his business card?
Just general supernatural work. Now, that stick sounds pretty impressive, but that stick and Mr. Woods himself almost met their match in what Billy Botts calls the tale of the feathered fiend.
Ooh, this sounds like it might have just turned out to be a bird.
It's a bird, yeah.
Okay.
It is hard to not see it as being just a bird, but please go with this.
Guessing it was a magpie as well.
An
of the
evil spirit.
All right.
In the form of a very large bird with coal black plumage and fiery eyes, but of a kind unknown to Ladlock folks, was seen perching on the church tower for several nights in succession, making an unnatural clamour which was heard far away. So, clearly, Ladlock's got a problem. Satan himself, in the form of a bird, is sitting on the church tower.
On the church. So naughty.
Sitting on the church tower. He's just sitting there making annoying noises and during the divine service, distracting the flock of the pastor by its croaking and cawing, as if in derision.
Oh.
And you remember, of course, Woods comes equipped with a special magic stick.
Yes.
Problem is, the bird's just a bit too far away.
Ah.
It's got a maximum range, the magic stick, so he's not able to, you know, he can't get it.
Yeah.
And he can't reach it with his whip, which is the other thing that he has, apparently. Like, he's kind of an Indiana Jones.
He is.
Mr. Woods. He's stumped until inspiration strikes. What is the devil afraid of, James?
I don't know. Give me a second.
Okay.
Let me think it through.
All right, but every second you waste, that bird is making annoying noises. Think about that.
People looking at his feet. Eggs?
Close.
Oh?
Surprisingly close. It's unbaptized babies.
Really?
Yeah, everyone knows that. Yeah, yes.
He must have loads. He must be thick with them.
Yep, everyone knows the devil is afraid of unbaptized babies. And, of course, it comes to him. He slaps his forehead and he goes, "Unbaptized babies," he says aloud. And his clerk interrupts and says, "Bless me, sure, 'tis a wonder I didn't think of that before." Now, I'm not doing the accent now. It's written like this.
Right.
"Why, old people, who are the only ones that know anything, say a babe in a house is more used to keep evil spirits out of than a five-pointed star cut on the doorsill or any number of horseshoes nailed to the lintel." Offensive?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's very hard to read because it's written in dialect. So babies were the
solution. Alistair,
yes, James.
Wait. I'm no expert, but as a father, my experience of babies, they are smaller than walking sticks.
They are smaller than walking sticks, James. You're absolutely right.
Did he have some sort of baby sling?
You've anticipated a problem that Mr. Woods did not. What he did was he gathered together as many as he could. 12
big pyramid.
Mothers with babies. Not all of them unbaptized, but beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah.
He got as many unbaptized babies as he could at short notice. And he had them basically just waving their babies at the bird. Just pointing, you know, power of baby.
Yes.
No. Their forces combine.
Heart.
But they didn't combine because what the bird did, slash Satan, was not look at the babies. It just hopped over to the other side of the church. And they were like, look at the babies. Oi, look at the baby. Oi, baby. And it just kept not looking.
Hey, devil, I got a baptized baby here. No, psych.
That's exactly what I don't want to look at. So what they did was they crossed the streams. Or to put that another way, one baby started crying and then another baby started crying and then they all started screaming. And the bird was like, "What is that noise?" Hopped around to have a little look, shot in the face by 12 babies. Many of the spectators said they saw sparks and blue flames thrown off with every flap of his huge wings.
Ooh.
Yeah, he took off straight into the sky and disappeared.
Like an 80s computer-generated graphic.
Yes. Yeah, special like the effect. Owl from Labyrinth.
Yeah.
It's like, flop, flop. He's gone. He has never more been seen there from that time to this.
Ooh.
Because as a bird, how long could you reasonably have expected him to live?
Especially when its eyes are on fire.
I've got yet more ghost-laying Parsons for you, James.
Mm-hmm. GLPs?
Yeah, this is the story of Wild Harris.
Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm.
The Bookaboo.
What?
Well, I think it might be the origin of the word Bookaboo.
Oh.
Bookaboo is an evil spirit, or Bookadoo. D-H-U, meaning black spirit, evil spirit.
Right.
In the Cornish language.
And is it the origin of the game Buckaroo?
Could be.
Let's see how much he manages to balance on this ghost.
There is a horse involved. Wild Harris is the ghost of Kenegi Manor, also known as the Squire's Spirit.
Ah.
According to Margaret Ann Courtney.
That's one person, right?
Yes. He was killed while hunting when he fell from his horse. The horse was startled by a white hare, which is believed to be the spirit of a deserted maiden which crossed its path.
H-A-R-E hair, obviously.
He had loved a damsel who was an orphan, but his father and cruel housekeeper schemed against her, and one day she turned up drowned, only perhaps to return in the form of a rabbit, which precipitated the death of Wild Harris himself.
Oh, an omen rabbit.
Mm.
Bright eyes.
Presumably red-eyed, we don't know. According to Bottrell, on winter's nights, the squire's ghost, with a dozen or more of his old comrades, in inverted commas, or such-like spirits, would assemble in the Bowling Green summer house, where they might be seen and heard from the mansion, even talking, singing, and I'm sorry to say, James, swearing. Yeah. And shouting in a state of uproarious mirth.
Hmm. What's he so pleased about, this ghost, this naughty ghost?
He was a party guy. He was he was a bedlam boy. He was a hoodlum. So he'd ride about hunting as a ghost. He'd go about drinking with his pals as a ghost. Nothing anyone could do could stop it. No, Lesser Parsons tried and failed to lay the spectre.
Mm.
Enter Parson Polkinghorn.
What?
It's Parson Polkinghorn. James is not afraid of any ghosts.
He is not afraid of no ghosts.
No, he isn't. He ain't afraid of no ghosts.
I'm not afraid of any ghosts. There's an invisible man sleeping in your bed. Who are you going to call?
Well, what the blimmin' hell is he doing in there?
How do you even know?
That is inappropriate. Oh.
No, that invisible man is cancelled.
I would say as soon as they got Parson Polkinghorn on the case, Wild Harris was toast, because nobody does it like Polkinghorn. I don't know exactly how they got him involved, but I feel like they were like, hey, we're looking for Parson Polkinghorn. And he was probably like, he's just cleaning something. And he was like, I don't exercise things anymore. I don't do that. I'm retired. And they were like, but we've...
Parson Polkinghorn? That's the name I've not heard in a long time.
We heard you were the best.
Martin Polkinghorn? Anyway, that's, I think, your joke, is it?
I think so. I had a really old joke about how Ben Kenobi isn't a good enough disguise because you can't keep your surname if you're on the run. You've got to change your surname. Keep your first name, change your surname.
Yes.
You can't just be, I'm Ben Kenobi. You can't, you can't just be like, oh, I'm Alan Hitler. People would ask questions.
But I suppose if you were called, Obi-Wan Smith.
still raises a few eyebrows.
Just change it all. Anyway.
Yeah, just change the whole name. So he says, all right, one last case. I'll help. But there must be, and he insisted on this, no intermeddling.
That's probably what put him off the game in the first place, all the intermeddling.
All the intermeddling. I'm sorry to tell you, James, there was some intermeddling.
Ah, oh, that's really... Ah, nice.
What
said
did
he
say? The one thing he said was no intermeddling. Several clergymen went to Kenegi, waiting for both the parson and Wild Harris to appear. Mm. They went to the summer house, candles everywhere, very spooky atmosphere, but no ghost. And they started to get a little bit impatient. And one of them, the curate of St. Hela, impatient of action, He took from his breast a book and read therefrom some conjuring formulas by way of practice or for mere pastime.
What are you doing, the curate of St. Helena?
That stinks of intermeddling.
This is textbook intermeddling.
He may as well have looked up a dictionary definition of intermeddling and seen himself reading a dictionary.
Little picture labelled the curate of St. Helena, who isn't named in the story. We don't know who you are.
You're just someone who glued in a small mirror.
Of course, as soon as he read it, a crashing thunderclap burst over the building, shook it to its foundations and broke open the window. The Parsons fell on the floor as if stunned, and on opening their eyes, after being almost blinded by the lightning, they beheld near the open door a crowd of Bookadoo grinning at them, and then partially disappear in a misty vapour, to be succeeded by others who all made ugly faces and contemptuous or threatening gestures.
Really? Even with all these Parsons?
Yeah, now they were like, in the meadows. So eventually Polkinghorne arrives on the scene. He's like, what's happening here? Because I think it begins with an I. And ends with intermeddling.
Big time.
And using the magic words nom dom, that's nom dom, not right. Non dom, or nom nom nom, nom nom. Dom.
Nominative determinant, dom terminism.
Close. It's in nomine domini. It's a rustic corruption of the Latin for in God's name.
I nominate Jesus.
He gave a series of commands to the ghost of Wild Harris. Eventually,
yeah,
binding him up with a hempen cord. So, panic over. The Bookaboo tangled up in a hempen cord. Mm-hmm. He turns to the old curate of St. Helena, picks up the book on the floor and says, what's this? Oh, what's this? It's strange that there would be a book of conjuring and spells here. Just has a little leaf through. Oh, you probably shouldn't have had that, should you? So, probably pushes it to his chest and the other guy stumbles back a little bit. You were lucky, actually, he says. If you had chanced to have pronounced a word that you don't understand on the next leaf, you would have called hither such malignant fiends flying in the tempest of this awful night as would have torn ye limb from limb or have carried ye away bodily. Perhaps, becoming tired, they might have fixed ye on St. Ella's steeple. For my part, I wish you were there, lest a greater evil befall ye this night.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's in depth.
I think at that point it's reasonable to think that's the end of the intermeddling.
You'd hope.
Polkinghorne led the evil spirit away using his nom-dom powers. Back to your friend of mine, to Castle Andinus, from before, the fort, on his horse called Hector. Followed, I'm sorry to say, by those blimmin' clergymen. They crept along.
Multi-passing.
All the time, intermeddling on their minds. Until finally, the devil had to intervene.
Oh, no.
As they were following along, they went past a little house which was being repaired. I think the thatch was being repaired. And a bundle of spars that had been left lying around, which are small rods pointed at both ends, used for securing the thatch, were suddenly raised up in the air by a whirlwind. And then, fired through the air. Yeah.
At the multi-parson.
Yes. One of these devil-directed spars pierced St. Heller's curate's side, just above his pin bone, like an arrow shot from a bow. He fell on the ground like as if killed, and his companion, in drawing the spar out of his friend's side, had his hand burnt, just as if he had grasped red-hot iron.
Ouchie.
Yeah.
Where's your pin bone?
Hip joint.
Thanks.
We don't call it that now.
No.
Margaret Ann Courtney records that Wild Harris's ghost was finally laid to rest by a famous ghost-laying parson. That's Polkinghorne. In the end, intermeddlers out of the way, Polkinghorne had a clear run at his destination, Castle Andemus, the Iron Age fort. And just like in the first story I told you, he managed to trap the ghost there by setting it an impossible task. He set the ghost of Wild Harris the task of counting all the blades of grass within an enclosure in the fort 9 times.
Oof.
Yeah, he's not going to count all of them. Be realistic.
Because it's surely by the time he gets to the ninth, there's some will have grown.
Yeah.
Since the first.
Yes. It's like the fifth bridge.
Yes.
We don't know how many bridges there are. By the time you get to the end of the fourth bridge, there's a fifth bridge. And that is the final ghost-busting parson of Penzance and surrounding parishes.
Excellent stuff. Terrifying.
Chilling true tales of real ghosts and a squeaky door.
Yes.
James, how do you feel about placing some scores upon these tales?
Oh, I'm very ready.
Yeah?
Yep.
All right, my first category for you is names.
Yes. Penzance is a lovely name.
Yes, the Holy Headland.
The Holy Headland?
Yep.
Holy Headland.
So I think that's what I mean. Zance is like sands, like saints.
Ah.
So holy.
What, we got Willy Bots?
Yeah, Billy Bots.
The robot. Willie.
Van der Voor Lane. Who knows how that's even meant to be pronounced? Bookaboos. Kennegie Manor.
Margaret and Courtney.
Polkinghorn.
Yes. The Molto Pasta, which I think is Italian for many dinners, by the way. Molto Pasto. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic names. I love a Cornish name. I'm going to go 5.
Okay, well, in that case, next category, supernatural.
You know it's got to be good. If you've got the ghost of a lady who was shot and then who died with shot.
Yep. not of, James.
No, she died with bullets. Well, she's going to also be making a comeback.
That's the thing. These ghosts, they can only be laid in the parish they live in, but you can't get rid of them. You just got to distract them.
Mm.
So either of them could make a comeback when their tasks are complete.
I mean, the noise of the spinning, that was a bit disappointing that did turn out to be
yep, that was a
squeaky
a
door.
Disappointing. Yeah, I slightly overplayed that with my brilliant acting.
It was very good acting.
Mm. You'd think I was a spinning wheel.
I was doing a little research on the Ghosts of Penzance, and that lady did crop up, but none of the gunplay stuff, just that she was a ghost that walked through a wall sometimes.
Well, I'm glad to provide you some gun violence.
Yeah.
That's what the kids like.
Yeah.
That and listening to Morse code.
And podcasts about folklore.
Yeah. At least one teen listener came to my live show.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, there was a veritable teen, a spooky teen, who said, I listen to Lawmen. I am the teen listenership.
Wow.
Mm. So we got a teen listenership.
And then they skateboarded off?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Into the night.
Yeah. Radical, they said. They caught some bodacious air.
Oh,
and then just left.
Gnarly.
So supernatural.
5 out of 5.
Yes.
It was great. It was spooky. Yes. But then it also had Ghostbusters and ghosts getting their comeuppance.
Yeah.
And also the devil.
On the subject of comeuppance, my next category, how'd you like them apples? Which is a phrase that I don't really understand.
I don't understand it.
We don't understand it in England, but we do say it with relish.
Some people say it, and I don't like them.
Should be, how do you like those apples? How do you like these apples?
Why do you like apples? Why are you asking people's
like
opinion
apples?
About apples?
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but what it means, I think, is, sick on, right?
Yeah.
And there are lots of sick on situations here, right?
We've got noises for that. We don't need words.
Yeah, I think Mrs. Baines got a very much how do you like them apples situation when she instructed a man to shoot anyone in the orchard and then got shot
yes.
in her own orchard.
Yeah, to try
right in the orchard.
I don't know what she was expecting. Really.
No. What did she think was going to happen?
But she got, I am killed.
What a catchphrase. Now, we've got the devil
yeah.
being slapped in the face with 12 babies, the last thing it would want.
In this case, the apples are babies. I still think they should have fired them at the devil.
In an ideal world, yeah.
In an ideal world,
the intermeddling vicars very much got their comeuppance.
Oh, they did. Well, they very nearly got even more than comeuppance. They almost got a whole orchard's worth of apples.
More. It happened twice.
Yeah,
they were like, close one, time for you to skedaddle. And they were like, we'll just keep coming a bit and follow along a little while until I nearly die.
So that's a good, what's that, 4 comeuppances or 3?
I think it's probably 4. I haven't been counting.
Wait a minute. We got the lady in the orchard. We got
I've got another
devil.
One for you, James. What about the guy who pretended to be a ghost for no reason and got punched in the face?
By a Geordie, yeah. Okay, it's a 4.
How'd you like them apples?
How'd you like them apples? And this kiss, the apple is my fist.
Here's an orchard for you. Bang.
How about you have a nibble on this Cox's pippin? Bang. Yes. Okay, 4.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was actually five, but fine. Moving on to my final category, Ghostbusters.
But there were only four Ghostbusters.
Were there?
In the film.
In the film, there were only four Ghostbusters, but I carefully made sure that there were six in this, in case you said that. Yeah.
Six?
I'm pretty certain I had five Ghostlang Parsons. Four Ghostlang Parsons. One Geordie Saylor.
Plus Geordie.
Plus Margaret Ann Courtney herself when she ghost busted the spinning wheel ghost.
That's more debunked.
It wasn't really a ghost.
Debunked.
It's a form of busting.
Debunk is a form of bust. All right then. I can't remember how many ghost busting vicars we had. As long as you're not counting any of those multipasto.
I'm absolutely not counting the multipasto.
Okay. I don't know if they should subtract some ghost busting, but I'll let it slide. I'll give you five. This was a high scoring tale. You deserve it.
That was very high scoring.
Mm. It was great stories.
And there's absolutely loads more.
Oh yeah. I did a bit of research into Penzance, and I found in Ghosts of Cornwall by Peter Underwood, president of the Ghost Club Society.
No, that's Indiana Jones. Sorry, I was trying to do the national anthem, but I did the Indiana Jones.
And yeah, I've got some very spooky stuff from Penzance.
Oh, from the Dolphin. How exciting! Inn. From the Dolphin Inn, James.
Yes,
I've been there.
You've been to the Dolphin Inn?
I had a spinach pie.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
But then I came back the next day and they said, we're not doing food.
And we haven't for 10 years.
Yeah, that spinach pie was a ghost.
Oh, no.
Sounds like we've got a third Cornish episode on our hands.
I think it's good for the summer, isn't it? Have a little summer breakdown in Cornwall.
Have a little holiday.
Did you have a nice time?
It was nice, yeah. Good little break.
Good. I had a little break away as well.
Little breakaway.
I went to see if the standing stones in Enston would move on Midsummer's Eve.
If they do, in fact, move.
It's
a shame no one was recording that in any way.
You know what, actually?
Why, actually?
It was recorded by some friends of the show, the Quantum Mechanics Paranormal Podcast, and we did a little live stream to see. It sort of got called Stonewatch 2023, and I kind of like the idea of, you know, making it a rival to Springwatch, but for a stone, just for one night.
Just to see if a stone that, spoilers, is definitely not going to move, moves.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah, spoiler, the stone did not go down to the river for a drink, revealing
the
chest full of gold.
No way, it didn't move.
Yeah. Mm. As we've said multiple times before, it's not about the destination.
It's not. It's about the journey.
A pot of gold. It's about the stones that we stare at along the way.
It's about the journey that stone did not make.
Yeah.
As it stayed motionless relative to the earth.
Absolutely motionless. But if you stay on after the end, or at the end of the podcast, there's a little snippet from the Quantum Mechanics podcast
which treat.
You can go check out.
Or a little free bit of a different podcast.
Free bit of a different podcast. Mm. Or go check it out, youtube.com/lawmenpodcast for that and more.
And more.
And more.
It's not as priority as you think, Penzance.
But way more parsony.
Well, a load of Parsons. You can't move for Parsons.
Parsnips and Parsons are unrelated.
Unrelated as far as I know.
Cool. Keep it that way.
If the listener is impressed by just the quick wit on display in our podcast, it's just like that, where you notice two words sound similar. Is there more of this available than the podcast? Is there?
There's stuff that we didn't even put in this.
Just like even lower quality banter than this.
Is there? Fewer quality.
How can people access it, should they wish to?
patreon.com/lawmenpod. And they'll also get access to the Law Folk Discord, where they can meet like-minded law folks. That devil belongs in a museum of devils.
It's midsummer.
It's midsummer,
And we're in the well, it's where we were last year. We're by some standing stones. We're waiting for them to go and take a drink at the pub. We're with our very good friend James from the Lawmen.
Hello.
And somebody else who is a friend of the show, Tim, who's over there.
Hello.
There are basically four men standing at the side of an intersection of two roads with some stones.
Yeah, I mean, we did this last year. And to be frank, when it hit midnight, we were here to see these stones move, probably go and get a drink, either at the pub or the stream. There seems to be some debate about that. And anyone who listened to last year didn't really come off last year, but we do think we may have had the wrong Midsummers. Isn't that right, James?
It depends whether it's going for the celestial or the sort of traditional calendar one.
Yeah. So we thought we'd give it another crack this year. So, yeah, this is Stonewatch 2023.
Don't worry. We do have other stuff to come up. Yeah. We're not going to fill the show just with that.